Hello everyone, welcome to Chan Podcast. Here is where you learn about meditation and Chan. So, what is Chan? Chan, spelled as C-H-A-N, is the Chinese school of Mahayana Buddhism and is the originating tradition of Japanese Zen. We encourage you to learn and practice meditation with a group. If you'd like to, feel free to visit our website londonchanmeditation.org.
Good evening. So how's tonight? Okay, we didn't do 30 minutes movement meditation. I don't know whether it's a joyful thing for you. So tonight my talk was actually addressed to a question raised in December last year. They want me to talk about the method of Nianfo and reciting the names of other Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Okay, and we'll see whether I'll be able to answer another questions. There are a couple of questions which just submitted either today or yesterday. We'll probably do it next month. Okay. All right. So you raised a question of Nianfo, and I wonder whether you know Chinese or not. It's a pronunciation in Chinese. You know, it's interesting. And I would like to, you know, a lot of people, how they perceive this method of Nianfo, or chanting the Buddha's name. They may think it's something kind of a shallow practice, or you know, not a practice that a Chan practitioner will be engaged in. So I'd like to give you a few perspectives on this method. And I call it the mindful recollection of the Buddha. Mindful recollection of the Buddha. Why did this call this name? And I'll explain later on, and you will note why I refer it with this name. Actually, this mindful recollection of the Buddha, this practice, it actually began at Buddha's time. And according to the sutra, Agama, during Buddha's time, and the Buddha, he was aware that the people, the beings in this world is full of craving, very, very greedy, lust, very, very strong. So he started to teach his students the practice of meditation on impurity. But they use a body, actually as corpse, to meditate on it. So they start with, usually it's a very remote, you know, in the mountains. That person will be alone and it's a hidden place. That would not be seen by their people. So he starts contemplate, meditate on corpse, parts by parts and parts. You know, the corpse during that time, especially in India, you know, it would get rotten, deteriorated very, very quickly, very high temperature and humidity entry there. And then start with that, and you see the corpse, the flesh, the blood, skins, and gut all messed up, very, very rotten. It's very, very stinky, to a point, it's not tolerable. So even the person who practiced this method, he would smell like the rotten corpse. And his face, his facial complexity will also change. Then you start seeing all these worms eating the fleshes of that corpse. It's very, very disgusting, very, very smelly. And start with the corpse and then start to meditate on oneself. That's very kind of a terrifying practice. So the bhikkhus, the monks, who practice that, after a while, after a period of time, usually it's, takes more than a month or so. And then he started to meditate on himself. He felt he's very, very filthy, very filthy, disgusting, and then become terrified, completely fearful, in terror. And then disgust his body so much and kill himself, commit suicide. So after that incident, and then the Buddha, and then start to teach his students. There's kinds of mindfulness practice, meditating on the Buddha, mindfulness practice on the Buddha, mindfulness on the Dharma, mindfulness on the Sangha, and mindfulness on giving, charity, generosity, mindfulness of upholding the precept, and mindfulness of the heavenly beings. Okay, the heavenly being is not wishing to be born in heavenly realms, but it's a reminder, encourage people to practice the 10 virtuous deeds and practice meditation. So they will be in the realm of form, realm of formlessness. So the Buddha, during Buddha's time, the Buddha began to teach his students the 6 kinds of mindfulness practice. In the mindfulness, meditation on the Buddha comes the first. And then later on, Buddha passed away and all his disciples miss him so much. They miss being around with their teacher and receiving guidance from him, being taken care of, be guided from him, receive all the compassion, care, and love, and the guidance of, wisdom. So they miss him so much. And more of this disciple engage on this mindfulness practice. And there are actually 2 kinds of this, the mindfulness practice, 2 kinds of meditation on the Buddha. The first one requires visualization. They meditate on the Buddha's image, which requires visualization, you know, bring about the Buddha's image up front, and then, you know, according to the sutra, the Buddha possessed 32 great marks, very auspicious mark. So they start contemplating on one mark and move on to the next and that, which is very, very difficult. You know, the Buddha is depicted in the sutras is very high, tall, big bodies, and all the parts, you know, so very delicate, a lot of subtlety and nuances in there. If any of you have read the Sutra of Meditating on the Bodhisattva Samantabhadra, Puxian Guanjin, it goes and leads you step by step, all the details, all the subtleties, how do you contemplate, visualize the image of Bodhisattva. And that is just Bodhisattva, let alone the Buddha. A lot of complexity, the subtlety, everything. And you start from the very beginning, step by steps, and then towards, you know, that that requires tremendous power of a concentration and clarity of the mind. Samadhi and Vipassana at the same time. So you'll be able to know the subtle details very, very clear, and your mind can stay on in calmness and clarity for a long time, so you can move on part by part. Maybe for some beginners, he begin with visualize the first parts and meditating on that. He couldn't even finish. And then he continued to practice more. He may be able to go on and move on to meditating on the second parts. So that's very, very difficult. It requires a very, very solid, a good foundation of the meditation practice. The second kind of meditation on the Buddha. This is hard too. Okay. You know, they will bring about the benefit they have received from the Buddha, such as the words of his wisdom, shining light in their life, transform their life, transform their thoughts, transform their minds, and the compassion, the loving kindness that made them feel safe, secure, free of fear, a sense of direction in life and, you know, the path of practice. Meditate on the Buddha's virtue and merit. And that's even harder. It's not like, you know, the image, the characteristics, the marks of the Buddha. You have something concrete that you have the impression of the image. You rely on your good memory, clear recollections of the Buddhas. You know, in the past, there is no picture, there is no photo, okay? So rely on one's memory, memorizing the image of the Buddha and meditating on the virtue and merit. That's even harder. And then when this Nianfo chanting the Buddha's name came about. It is approximately in the 4th or 5th century in China when the Sutra of Amitabha Buddha was translated into Chinese by the great translator and great master Kumarajiva. After that sutra was translated, so the Buddha of Amitabha Buddha was introduced to the people. In that particular sutra, that Amitabha Buddha made of 48 great vows, in that particular sutra, say whoever's chant his name and willing to go to his pure land, go to his Buddha land, and be able to arrive there. He's welcome to stay in Amitabha's Buddha's land, which it is called the pure land of Amitabha Buddha is called the Buddha land of ultimate bliss, 极乐世界. In the sutra, it states, you know, that is a beautiful world, very full of, you know, garlands, jewels, you know, beautiful, and all this lands is plain, and you know, even lands, even the birds, the trees, they are chanting the Buddha. They are saying that they're practicing, let alone the bodhisattvas and the Buddhas. There's a lot of bodhisattvas in that pure land of the Amitabha Buddha. And also all those, you know, who has already reached high attainment of their practice. What is good about that place? It's not about, you know, they're rich in all the material things, but there's no evil person, no evil thought, no evil words, no evil conducts, no crime, no filthiness. Pure and clean. The whole world is like that. And why people want to go there? Oh yes, I'll be free from troubles, worries, vexations, suffering, you know, completely liberated in that way. To enjoy the nice environment, the atmosphere. That's not correct attitude. People go there, should have the right attitude, because that's very ideal place, a very conducive to your practice, if you practice wholeheartedly, diligently. Just like we come into a retreat, in a chan hall, in a retreat center, in a Buddhist, in a Dharma center. In the retreat, the place is nice and clean, tidy, orderly, everything's. There's nothing you need to worry. I mean, everything is set up very simple. You know, you only need to sit, walk, eat, and sleep. You don't need to do anything else. So you can devote all your time there while you are in the chan hall, committed to the practice, to practice wholeheartedly, diligently, with your whole being. That's the purpose. That's the purpose if you want to go to the pure land of the ultimate bliss. That should be your attitude. You are not going there because you want to run away from this Saha world full of anxiety, wars, opposition, hatred, violence, crime. It's not because you want to enjoy of all the rich abundance of materials, living a happy life. No, that's not the purpose. The purpose is over there. You will not be disturbed by other things. You can wholeheartedly practice. And that should be the purpose if you want to go to the pure land. So after that sutra of Amitabha Buddha was translated in China, and slowly and more and more people reading it. So that's where this method of chanting the Buddha's name, reciting this Buddha name, become popular. Oh, people, okay, if I can just chant the Buddha Amitabha's name, when they chant it, they feel peace. They feel less fearful. And they also wish to be reborn in that pure land. And you ask where this chanting the Buddha's name can be applied to other Buddhas. I mean, certainly, it is just a name of the Buddha. If you feel close, have this affinity with the Buddha, Amitabha Buddha, and then when you chant the name of Amitabha Buddha, it resonates with you. That's meaningful. You feel something, right? Just like when you go to a dinner, dinner party, whatever, dinner date. If you're sitting, with someone, your good friends, your loved one, you feel happy. If you're sitting, having even a very, very gourmet meal sitting in front of a string, you probably will enjoy a little bit less. So if you want to use this method, chanting the Buddha's name, a Buddha that you feel resonate to, you can certainly recite the name of the medicine Buddha in the eastern direction. You can also chant the name of the Asokpa Buddha. That's fine, no problem. And however, over time, because the chanting the Buddha's names is fairly, fairly easy, very simple, and you can practice, you can apply it almost anywhere, at any time. It's not subject to like a sitting meditation, you want to meditate, requires certain place and certain time, right? Just like what we have learned in the beginner's meditation class, yes, certain place, certain time, that will be conducive to your meditation practice. Unless you become very, very experienced, very advanced in your practice, then place and time may not be such a big problem, such a problem for you. And some people, they did, they have this inclination. They have the interest. They are interested in reading and studying the sutra, the Buddha's teachings. Fine. Not everyone could do. Some people, yes. And some people, they love to do meditation, and they can meditate very well, and they really, get the gist and feel very happy, joyful when they meditate. But chanting the Buddha's name is so simple. Like Amitabha Buddha, in Chinese, Amitabha. Very, very simple. Very simple syllabus. Okay. And then you can join it anytime. It doesn't have to be you're sitting, you're walking, you're doing, you can join it anytime. And anybody can use it as long as they know how to utter the sounds of Amitabha Buddha. So it becomes more and more people can actually engage in this chanting. So it becomes popular. But you know, when something becomes popular, it seems to inevitably, when many people practice, they go deep, they don't know well, and the practice become shallow. Practice in a very superficial way, very shallow way. Absent-minded, mindless, they just chant. And those people are those who think, you know, how they judge their practice, how they judge whether they practice diligently. You know, either by how many times I chant the names of the Buddha. Let's see. Okay, I want to chant 1,000 times of the Buddha's name today, and then he will try to make time to meet the quotas. So he may be, you know, cooking in the kitchen, chanting, and then clocking, and then, you know, make sure that he reached the 1,000 times quota. So that's how they review their practice, by quantity, by how many times they chant. So when they start doing that, their mind is not on the name of the Buddha's name. They're just making sounds. How different that is from you're playing a recording sound. When you're absent-minded, your mind are something else, your body, your hands are doing something else. And then chanting the name just become a habit. You know, when something become routine habit, you lose your awareness. You are not cultivating the mind at all. On the other hand, and you are, what are you doing? You are cultivating an absent-mindedness. You're cultivating a mindless mind. When you are practicing like that, becomes a routine, becomes a habit. Your mind is somewhere else and you are not practicing at all. So if you practice like that, by meeting the quotas, how many times? Yes, 1,000 times. So next week I'm going to try 1,100 times more, 1,100. That will not do you much good. But still, it has some effects. But because when you are chanting the Buddha's name, at least you are not bad-mouthing somebody. You are not yelling somebody. You are not cursing someone. So to that extent, yeah, this comparatively is much better than you're cursing someone, bad-mouthing someone. But what is the correct way? What is the right approach, the right attitude to practice this mindfulness on the Buddha? What is the right practice? First, for anybody who wants to engage in the practice of meditating on the Amitabha Buddha, You need to meet these three principles. It requires three principles. First is faith. Not only have the faith on the teacher who teaches this method, have the faith and confidence on yourself that you can use the method, you can practice well of this method. But also, you have the faith in the Abhidhamma Buddha. Abhidhamma Buddha. You have the faith, you have the confidence on this method of chanting the Buddha's name. It will help you, guide you to achieve your goal, be able to be reborn in the pure land of ultimate bliss. First is the faith. You yourself, the teacher, the method of chanting the name, and also on the face of the Buddha, Amitabha. Second, the vow. Very, very strong will. A conviction. The general vows, definitely, for any practitioners, serious practitioners, the general vow is four great vows. Vow to deliver all sentient beings, vow to cultivate self of vexations, vow to master limitless approaches to Dharma, and vow to attain the Buddhahood. And also, the specific vow that you wish to be reborn in the pure land of the Abhidhamma Buddha, you vow to engage in the practice and learn from the Abhidhamma Buddha until you reach the stage of non-retrogression, which is the first bhumi, the stage of non-retrogression, then you will never regress or retreat from your practice or the mind, the Bodhi mind. You are never lost that. And then you will come back to the Saha world and to help all sentient beings. So when someone wants to be aspired to go to the Western, to the Pure Land, ultimate bliss, doesn't mean you're going to become a resident there, living there forever. You want to make use that environment to engage in the practice wholeheartedly and receive the teachings from the Amitabha Buddha and be practiced with other Buddhas and other saints wholeheartedly until we reach a stage that you will never retreat, regress from your practice, lose your Bodhi mind, and you come back to the Saha world to help others. You gain the power, your mind is doing, you know, will not be changed or moved, whatever happens, then you are fully capable, come back to the world, help all sentient beings. Okay, and that's one, if one wants to go to the Pure Land of Abhidhamma Buddha, should have this clear understanding the correct attitude. And then I want to talk about the method. Okay. The method is quite simple. You just need to chant the name Amitabha Buddha. Amitabha. It seems that when it is pronounced in Chinese, it's easier, simpler than in English. Amitabha. So, sound is even, steady sound. Now all of a sudden, high pitch, low pitch, very stable, steady. And then you chant the name with your whole beings. It's practiced at the very beginning. Why does becomes popular and easy for people, accessible to everyone to use? Because it requires you seek, uttering the sound, Amitabha. Your ear listen to the sound very clearly. Words, the pronunciation for Western, for you, you know, the syllables, Amitabha. You're saying, you are chanting it. Your ear, listen very clearly. And also this is a practice very, very suitable, proper for a group, a whole group of people practice together. A very powerful, strong group practice. So your ears are also listening to the chanting of everyone. And your mind, mindful of the Buddha's name. Your mind is fully mindful, clearly aware, the Buddha's name. Your eyes better be slightly open, not closed, because closed, so when your eyes are closed, it's easier to have wandering thoughts or illusory image. So you chant the Buddha's name moment to moment into every moment. Every thought, every instant, you're mindful of the Buddha's name. You're mindful of the Buddha. You are chanting with your mouth, with your ears, with your mind. So that requires, you know, the sound, hearing the sound. So people, you know, people are usually their mind are very, very scattered. Body is very coarse. Their mind is so coarse. So it's very hard for them to all of a sudden to calm their self, be able to aware their breathing, the whole body relaxing. But when you introduce a very complicated method, and people need to make an effort to chant, to utter sounds, and four different kind of sounds, Amitabha. And you have to listen, because when you chant the name with everybody else, you want them to be in the same rhythm and melody, right? And in your mind, it's not wandering. You know, so from one Amitabha, and then Amitabha, every single time you recite the name, word to word, distinctly, very clearly. You hear it, you say it, and you are clear where you are mindful of that. Until you reach the so-called unifying mind, that no worrying thoughts, nothing will disturb you or distract you. Your mind is completely not just concentrated, but unified. Moment to moment, thought by thought. So in the very beginning, it's hard. So at the very beginning, we will advise people to chant the name in loud volume, chanting the name out loud. Okay, you need to make effort to chant out loud, and that help you to collect your thoughts, to concentrate the mind. You need to make effort on that. Okay, and while you are chanting, your mind has to be there. Your mind is somewhere else. You're saying something. We do that all the time, even talking to our friends. And you know, your mind has to be there chanting. Very, very clear. And this is the only thing you need to do. When your mind got distracted, carry away, come back to the sound, ear listening, okay? And when you actually working better and better on the method, you don't need to chant out loud. You can lower your volume. You don't need to make so much effort. And your body, very smooth. And when you are engaging the practice, the base is very the same, very much the same. You want to start with a sitting, by your sitting posture, instead of walking or moving, which is more challenging. You want to sit down in a comfortable posture, like our sitting posture. That's fine. That's the best one, best body posture, position, and then start to relax your whole body. While you're relaxing your whole body, you're also calming your mind. Your mind slowly will open. Not cluttered, not closed, not agitated. So relaxing body is very, very important. No matter what method you use, start with relaxing the body, calming the mind. Okay? And then chant. And then continue to practice like that. When mind got carried away, and you know, just bring it back to what you are doing with your whole being, your mouth, your ears, your whole body, your mind, your whole body. And to a point, every cell of your body is also chanting the name. Chanting the name, and then slowly, body, you may not feel your body, and then with only leaving the sound. Okay, that's when you practice with a group. By the way, there are also 7-day retreats for this recitation practice. And although we never had a chance to hold it here in Vancouver, we did that quite often in Taiwan because it's a popular practice there. Okay. And what if you are chanting by yourself alone, not with a group? Start with the same thing. You're chanting by yourself, relax the body, sitting there, and calm your mind, and start. And then picking up the name of the Buddha, and when you chant slowly, Amitabha, at the same pace, same rhythm, every word, every sound when you utter is clear, very clear. Okay? And then your mind maybe wandering away, And then when you chant, and all of a sudden you are not chanting, your mind is somewhere else. So what can you do at this moment? You add a number, just like counting the breath. You say, and you start chanting. You know, when you chant, when you engage practice alone, you actually don't need to chant out loud. Which, if you are very distracted in a very you know, agitated state or very tense, and then you can begin with the chanting out loud, okay, and then you can chant the name of the Buddha silently in the mind. So what you would do, Amitabha. One, Amitabha. Two, Amitabha. Three. Sounds very easy. Then you may all of a sudden drop everything. When you count to five, you don't remember. Your mind, you're lost. And then you come back to one, Amitabha. One, Amitabha. Two. And to 10, you come back to 1. And, you know, in the same process, you probably also will encounter the same situation as you do the sitting meditation, your leg pains and your back pains, and you start wondering, become too hot or too cold, you want to move around, all these things, your physical, biological, you know, reactions, just simply be aware not to be affected by all this physical reaction. Simply be aware and do what you're supposed to be doing. Okay, and start with that, and gradually and more, and you know, and your mind will be able to concentrate better, and then all the wandering thoughts will fall away. So this is something we do when we are alone. And also during the intensive retreat of this practice, we also engage in a chanting, chanting the name of the Buddha in walking. You know, you walk, you sit down, and you chant the name, and you stand up, you start to walk, and also chant the name. And natural walk, and then gradually, you know, speed up, and then very, very fast and chanting. You know, when you have a few hundred people in a chant hall and doing that, that's extremely, extremely powerful. And the energy from the group practice is so tremendous. It's so powerful, and help everyone to really, really fully engage in the practice. And so that's very powerful practice. And then in the end, toward the end of the walking, chanting and walking meditation, and then slow down the pace, and then return to your seat. And then you sit in silence for a short period of time. Even though during that silent period, nobody actually chanting out loud the name, but you should be chanting silently. The recitation continues. So that's the practice of reciting and chanting the Buddha's name. Okay. And the goal is to reach the unified mind, just like our meditation practice. And then that's the goal, to reach the unified mind. Then if you wish to be born in the pure land of the ultimate bliss, Then you continue. You hold it, Amitabha Buddha, in your mind, completely mindful of the Buddha all the time, whatever you're doing, not just during the retreat, during the practice time, extended to your everyday life. And wish to be reborn in that world. And this actually make use of the chan meditation method in this chanting practice. So this nianfo or chanting the Buddha's name, mindful recollection of the Buddha, is actually a chan practice. It is a chan practice. The chan approach, the chan method. And here's another option that you can choose. When you reach the unit 5 mind, and if you don't want to be reborn in the Amitabha Pure Land, then you can change it to the method of Huatou. Just reciting the Buddha's name. Who's reciting the Amitabha Buddha? That become your Huatou. And that Huatou is so powerful and can lead to completely smashing the unified mind and reaching the no mind, which is the goal of chan practice. Okay. Any questions? Any questions? Okay. You know, the three methods of mindful meditation on the Buddha, chanting the Buddha's name, and meditation on the Buddha's image, and the meditation on the Buddha's merits and virtue, is all falls into the categories of practice or meditation practice with form. Requires an object with form. Buddha's image, the Buddha's name, the name of the Buddha, and then the merits and virtue. And there's another kind, which is more advanced, is meditation of the Buddha without form, formless approach. Okay. So I will not elaborate on that. It will take much more time and maybe some other occasion if you're interested in that. Any questions? Some, okay. Eva, yes.
Yeah, my question is, when during the recitation of Amitabha's name, does one visualize his statue in red color and so on?
No, unless you use your approach of meditation on the Buddha, it's the approach of visualization. Visualize the Buddha's image. Then you don't need to recite his name. You're just using your eyes. You know, when we engage in a meditation practice, there are two things. There are one thing, actually, is a one thing. We have to be very clear of, you know, the six sense organs that in the body that we make use of. And then to practice, there's an object of this practice. We need to know clearly what object is that. Like, the meditation on the Buddha's image, you are engaging your eyes. And the Buddha's image is the object of your meditation, the object of your awareness. When you chant the Buddha's name, your mouth uttering the sound, your ears and the mind, the thoughts, the mindfulness, it requires the engagement of three sense organs. Some more complicated methods is easier to, it's an easier entrance for people to practice. Easier to get their hands on it. The simpler methods is the most difficult one because we are too complicated. So if you are this complicated and the similar complexity at the same level, the methods that will match you, suitable for you. If you are this complicated, a method is very simple here. Yeah, you got a challenge there.
Okay, thank you.
Tom, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Venerable. I'm just so inspired and appreciative of the very thorough and contextualized discussion of Nianfu. I think part of my question comes out of this wanting to reconcile different traditions, for example, in Pure Land traditions that are more devotional towards Amitabha, versus maybe like tantric traditions that are more approach it more from an aspect of psychology. And hearing you talk about the Chan tradition and the approach that is, it's so it goes hand in hand with all of our other Chan practices is very, very interesting and a really helpful contextualization. So I just really appreciate the talk and the explanation. It's very, very helpful. Thank you.
Any questions?